Hello, everyone. This is Greg, your host of Goddamn GameCube, and this is Season 4. Follow Goddamn GameCube on social for updates on the show, and subscribe to us on YouTube for bonus video content. Thank you, and enjoy today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Goddamn GameCube. Greg and Riley are your hosts today, and this is a very timely episode. God of War Ragnarok comes out in just a few days, so we are going to be doing our retrospective on the God of War franchise, mostly the main entries, but we are going to be talking about Ascension as well. So I ingested the first three games in this franchise over the past month. I played God of War PS4 when it came out, so I feel very fresh and ready for this. So, Riley, why don't you take it, and let's do it.
Of course. Yes, so I want to be clear. We got a little negative feedback about our Dead Space episode because we didn't get deep into 2 and 3. We just had that big Silent Hill marathon. I apologize if anyone is looking for a more in-depth review of these. I don't believe that these games iterate enough to warrant an episode each, so we're just going to kind of go through the highlights of the first couple and give the 2018 God of War kind of its time in the spotlight. So I want to start out just a brief overview about the series, created by this fellow David Jaffe, I believe his name is, also created the Twisted Metal series.
Interesting.
And, very interesting. And, was in the news a couple of years prior, because he was complaining about the new Metroid game, and he kind of stepped in it, apparently, where he's like, I don't get it, like it doesn't work, and everyone was kind of giving him shit for it. So
was this, you mean like Metroid Dread, or are we talking
Metroid Dread. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the most recent appearance of this man. He has kind of fallen out of the public favor, but he was the author of the original trilogy here, the original series, 1-3, and Ascension. We're going to be talking about it. They are combo-focused action games, some adventure, hack-and-slash influences here, with some puzzle solving. It was pitched as Devil May Cry meets Ico, which is a very kind of interesting...
To me, this game is just Prince of Persia, but over-sexualized.
Yeah, sure. I would say, along with Resident Evil 4, this was instrumental in repopularizing QuickTime events.
Ugh.
Very, very unfortunate there. This series, if you are not aware, it chronicles the many adventures and war crimes of the Spartan warrior Kratos as he seeks revenge on the Greek gods who he feels are responsible for his miserable life. The main kind of iconic weapons of the series are the Blades of Chaos. They go through a couple different iterations. I think these are kind of like iconic, would you say?
I would say so. I mean, I think in theory they're chained to your arms, right?
Yeah.
And you kind of throw them almost, I don't even know how to describe it.
Like grappling hooks
or
something.
Almost. Yeah, almost. Yeah. Spinning blades on your arms.
I think that kind of differentiates the series a little bit. The main actor in these first couple, T.C. Carlson, I love him. He always turns in an excellent performance as a guy who is constantly shouting.
Really good at shouting.
They're incredible. There's a video I'm going to try to link to where it's like a super cut of every time he shouts someone's name because he gets Zeus, Athena, Ares.
There's a lot of yelling.
It's like nonstop. He has one volume. And there is a very good narration in all of these titles by actress Linda Hunt. I wanted to just point out she was an actor in the original Dune movie, as well as the recent Han Solo origin story. She has a very, very good voice, very kind of epic feeling. As I mentioned, very little iteration over time besides improving some janky performance issues. And this is kind of for reference, you know, it's kind of just all ancient Greek mythology. You get a lot of cool enemies like Gorgons, Centaurs, Harpies, Sirens, Minotaurs, and Satyrs. So all those, you know, kind of aspects of Greek myth. How did you feel about this as a Greek man? Was it true? I asked you this about Hades as well.
Did this really happen?
Is this funny?
I feel like when I played these games, it made me realize how little I knew about the mythology of my people.
Oh, okay.
You want to hear, like, we should, you know what? I'll tell the story when we get to the end of one, because I think it's funny.
All right.
But I'll save it for just a few minutes.
Okay, so let's get into one. So yeah, I played these over the last couple of years. The first one, it's a 2005 game, but it doesn't really feel like one
to me. It looks terrible.
I mean, so I played the PS3 re-release.
Yeah.
So basically, you have a setup here with Kratos. He is this Spartan warrior. He's very bloodthirsty. He invoked kind of divine power from the god of war, Ares, which left him indebted to him, tricked him into killing his own family. He has these chains around his arms, and the ashes of his family are bonded to his skin. That's why he has the white skin.
He has like that pale white ghost skin.
Yes.
Yep.
The ghost of Sparta. So I like I said, I don't have a ton to say about each of these games, but I do have a couple compliments about this first one. I'd like to just kind of rhyme off and then maybe you can say your thoughts on the first game.
Yeah, sure.
So number one, I want to say great establishing shot early on. So he is basically seeking revenge on Ares, and you see Ares very early presiding over a huge battle, and he is absolutely enormous. And you get this great shot of him, and it's very much like, there is your objective. Go get him.
What I thought was cool about this, I didn't quite realize what was going on. Where, I mean, I understood the story where you essentially invoked Ares to help save your life, and now you're indebted to him.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that when you're in this city the whole game, the giant dude overlooking the battlefield is him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It took me a while to figure that out.
Yes, yes, the fire giant from Elden Ring.
Yep.
Yeah, so I thought that was great. I really like that area. It's a kind of a big set piece. Kronos's back has the temple on it where you go get a Pandora's box.
Yep.
I thought that whole thing was great. There is actually a really funny scene where you're approaching that for the first time, and Kratos gets impaled by Ares from like 300 miles away.
Yep.
Like shows him throw a spear. I laughed because this is kind of like, this is going to be a running theme of these first couple, where Kratos is one of the only characters in video game history where I just hate him.
Yeah.
And I think I enjoy watching him suffer because I feel like everything that happens to him is pretty much his fault.
Yeah, and he's a fucking asshole the whole time.
And it pays off later, but I just, every time he like eats shit, I thought it was really funny. So that was great. And okay, so a couple tiny things I really wanted to mention that I like in all forms of narrative that I thought were really cool about this game is, number one, the Gravedigger. Early on in the game, you see this guy digging a hole in a graveyard, and Kratos like asks him, like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "I know it's for a purpose. I know." You don't really get that much. I think he kind of steers you in the right direction. You don't get that much information out of him. But later, when Kratos dies, he gets sent to Hades, and you're trying to escape from Hades, and you climb out of it, and a chain is dangling down, and you climb up, and you realize it's the Gravedigger has let the chain down for you.
Yeah,
and that's where you wind up, and you kind of wrap back around to the beginning of the game. Thought that was awesome.
Yep,
that was a very like Dark Souls 1 kind of moment.
Right, you get what's interesting. I think. Let me say this. I wouldn't necessarily call God of War 1 recursive in level design, but the narrative kind of is.
Yes.
Where you understand how the world is connected, and you do just enough backtracking for it to make sense.
It's not in too much backtracking, I wouldn't say. It's like very much like Kratos has to go out on his mission and comes back with what he needed.
Right. And I also think like in the level design, there is just enough secret stuff and other paths for you to go on where it's, I would call this a linear game, I think.
Yeah.
But there's just enough for you to sort of spread your wings a little where it's more interesting than you would think.
Yeah.
Like when I was actually kind of dreading playing these when we were going to cover these, because I played these for the first time like within the past couple of months, and I said, I don't really want to play this like over-sexualized man game, like muscly man combat. I don't really want to play this. But I think what stood out to me is the not only like the world design and the platforming and how this game is actually built, it is a better... I had a better time playing this than I thought I was going to.
Yeah.
Based on really how this world is designed.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think in general, my philosophy towards games and you know, all sorts of media is really trying to see the appeal. Like, for, you know, despite I don't like everything about these games, spoiler alert, but There, I did find things to like.
Yeah, me too.
Those are some of them. In terms of the platforming, I do want to bring up, I had some issues, especially in the first two games, where I don't know if it's just my personal sense of depth, but I found it really hard to judge like distances and gaps and stuff.
I think it's because the camera angle's fixed.
It is, yeah.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's
yeah.
that kind of era of games. So that is something I struggled with.
Well, you know, I made several notes about this when I was doing my preparation for this episode. I think I said this to you in a private chat somewhere where I said, God of War, like, even though it's not my favorite and I was not looking forward to playing it, it hits this very specific niche of games that I like.
Yep.
Where, you know, that mid 2000s, it's kind of platformy, it's kind of action-y.
It's like the transition.
Yeah, and it's kind of puzzle solvey and riddly.
Yeah.
I just like those kind of games.
Yeah.
So I'll say one thing too about platforming. What I loved and also hated, the platforming is so unforgiving and hard in this game.
Yeah.
At times when I was like, I was raging playing this, but I also like checked myself and said, Greg, this is what you ask for. You don't want games to play for you. You want to do it.
True.
And it's like, this game makes you do it.
Well, it's the only kind of saving grace in those moments for me were Kratos dying, because I thought it was funny. But yeah, I guess one last big thing is, so you know, very simple plot, coming back and confronting Ares. And something cool about it was, early on, in order to leave the area that you're in, you have to cross over this big bridge, which is in the shape of a sword. And then at the end, he grows to Ares' size. Kratos grows to Ares' size and uses that sword against him.
Yeah,
and I was
cool.
Like, fucking rocks.
Yeah,
like,
it's
that's
awesome.
That's great. So he winds up killing him and becoming the new God of War. Do you have any other thoughts on this first one that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I'll share something funny. When I was playing this, like I said, I played this for the first time.
Yeah,
I kind of laughed at how stupid I was when I played this.
Okay,
because I said, why is it called God of War? Am I the God of War?
And well, that's the cool thing about
right,
it.
Right,
yeah.
Right, right, right. And so I got to the end and I'm like, I could have just fucking Googled this. Like, yo, Ares is the God of War. How do I not know that? No, you sure. kill Ares, who is the God of War,
you
to become it.
Him.
Yeah. I was like, okay. Well, I actually, something I did want to bring up, I wish I played these games sooner, because I started seeing how, you know how the boss battles are very puzzly, they're all huge.
Yeah.
I started seeing how perhaps other games I really like were influenced by this game.
Yeah.
We love the Souls franchise on the show.
Yep.
I was like, they must have taken some influence from this, like especially Demon's Souls with some of the puzzle bosses.
Yep.
That I must have come
well,
from
so
this.
So in this one, you get the Hydra at the beginning.
Yeah.
That's very cool. A lot of kind of tricky stuff. There was actually, before I get away from it, I did like, something I think is very unique about this particular series is the Gorgon kind of move. You get a special item where you take the head of a Gorgon, you know, Medusa kind of thing, and use it to turn enemies to stone. I thought that was very creative.
Right, and they can do it to you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get to shake it off. No, so I this first game, I am going to give a B-. I don't know how you feel.
I would say the same. What I also found, like, you know what? Now that I've played them all, or all the main entries, what I started saying to myself, I was kind of laughing. I was saying, I kind of like the first one because of how quirky and like, silly it is.
Yes.
Where something that I found very silly when I was playing it, have you noticed, like, every human NPC you encounter, you either kill them or screw them over?
Yes.
And it's like really strange.
In pretty much all of them.
Yeah, you just like kill innocent people and it's just fine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of number one, you very rarely see that in a, you know, especially a series of this you know, caliber and budget. You rarely see like the protagonist being just like a shitty person,
yeah.
which he is constantly.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get into it later. But yeah, that is a notable aspect of this.
Well, another thing that I think God of War 1 did that I didn't expect was it kind of does the Sekiro and Star Wars thing where you eventually can traverse water.
Yes.
Like there's like the levels open up to be underwater, which I didn't expect that either.
No, yeah.
So I think this game has better adventuring and platforming than you might expect if you haven't played it.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, oh yeah, this game is really stupid and funny, but the platforming and adventuring is, I would say, is higher quality than I expected.
Yes, absolutely. Are you ready to move on, or?
Yeah, I think the last point that I'll make is I was also impressed by this game was combat-wise, I was kind of dreading this because I don't really enjoy combat. I don't enjoy action games where the combat system is like a fighting game with a bunch of combos. It's not really my favorite. But what I found interesting is I didn't expect you to have like a magic meter and powers and that sort of thing too.
Yeah.
So there's more going on than you would expect, especially for a PS2 game, 2005. Yeah, it's a B-. It's really silly and quirky, but I enjoyed playing it more than I thought I would.
Yep. Okay. So with that said, I would like to take a brief detour. You will not have anything to say about this.
Oh, God.
After this one, I played God of War Ascension next. So this game came out in 2013 after the main trilogy was out. And I just wanted to... So I'm very much like kind of... I want to see like the bulk of a series. I played almost every Silent Hill game.
Yeah.
I didn't play the Chains of Olympus or Ghosts of Sparta of this series, but I decided that this one was probably worth my time since it was a full PS3 title.
Mm-hmm.
It's a major release. So I just I don't think you realize that this was air quotes important, but so I did play this. And I have a couple things to say, not many. It's basically, so it's a prequel to the first game. I figured this was as good a time as any to play it. There's a couple different things about it. There are some limited use weapon pickups, like breakable stuff. And you can also tether enemies, with your chains, which is a new thing. There's kind of an interesting mechanic where you can either decay or heal objects, sort of like a time lapse thing. There is a cool part sort of where you have to rewind time to put a tower back together to traverse it. Thought that was cool. There is a Shadow Kratos, which can be used for puzzle solving.
Did they get that from the third Prince of Persia game?
Maybe.
Like Shadow Prince.
I was
Prince
thinking
and
about
Prince.
Majora's Mask when you play that song and leave the statue.
Either way,
it's kind of they did in Braid as well.
Yep.
That's kind of interesting. stop me if you've heard this one before. Online owned multiplayer mode that nobody plays anymore.
Oh, great.
So that was a fine use of your resources. you got a bunch of people
invoking Morrissey by mistake there, I think.
Yes. Yeah, I laugh about it now, but it hurt at the time or whatever he said. It's very clearly, it's a really confusing kind of timeline-wise. It jumps back and forth, which is ironic because it's a prequel. It should be pretty, like, straightforward. It's him versus the Furies, like, the ones in, I think, in Hades.
Yep.
Ultimately, for me, it's very unnecessary addition. Feels like a cash grab. You know, like was that Gears of War game that came out?
Judgment.
After? Yes.
Yep.
So I was like, I never played that one.
It's
so
fine.
I was just like, I don't need this. Like we talked about Silent Hill Origins not that long ago, and it's just like you don't need like it doesn't. It's a prequel that tells you nothing new.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like more money. So I would give this one a C-. Very, very bland effort. It's just very clearly that point where it's like we're out of ideas for now.
I kind of forgot this game came out.
Yeah,
I think I was working at GameStop at the time.
It was around the time like Last of Us came out. So
they got crushed.
Nobody was playing this. Let's move on to God of War 2.
This is a weird one.
Very, very weird. This game starts out, Kratos is shunned and disliked by the other gods for his destructive ways. There's a battle scene in the beginning where Zeus animates the Colossus of Rhodes in a bid to trick Kratos into abandoning his powers. Zeus kills Kratos and wipes out his army. It's a big kind of betrayal moment here. Kratos is saved by the Titan Gaia and enters an uneasy alliance with the Titans. So the start of this game, like I was kind of like, okay, so it's basically like more God of War, right?
Yeah, I think what stood out to me about this game, not in a positive way, it's like I feel like I'm playing the same game.
Yeah,
I feel like it's hard. I don't want to say I don't want to tell the developer what their philosophy was, but to me, it felt like The first game had big set pieces. You were at the set pieces for a very long time.
Yeah.
But in this game, it felt like I was going from place to place to place in a flash.
Well, in the beginning, yeah. Some things that I liked the Pegasus segments in the beginning.
Oh, I hated this.
Really?
I hated this shit.
I liked it because it kind of broke up the experience and moved it forward. Mm-hmm. I felt like it was just kind of like something different for once, mm-hmm. I guess.
But the rest, you know what, the rest of the gameplay was so similar. Something that also kind of I ding this game for, didn't you kind of feel like the monsters are all reused too?
Yes.
Yeah, right?
Most of them, I think there's like a couple new ones.
Yeah.
The majority of the game takes place on the island of creation. So that is kind of like, I think, the main, like the Steeds of Fate. That's a cool set.
That was
piece.
A cool, I like, that was a cool, visual, I think.
Big statue of horses that move around and stuff. I thought that all was pretty cool. The idea that people would make something like this is very funny, but, it's right. So there are a couple, new additions, the bow, the Typhon bow, the Icarus wings.
Well, I feel like the Typhon bow is just you throwing the lightning bolts, but in bow form. It's just the same thing, right?
I guess you're right.
Yep.
But the wings are really cool.
Yep.
And the blocking with the fleece, the parrying thing.
Yeah. You get the exact parry.
Yep. So those were a couple good things I liked about it. okay, so I messaged you guys about this while I was playing it, and I want to know if you had the same experience.
Okay.
There is an insane segment of this game towards the end where... you kill some random guy, some scholars, like read the book or whatever. And there's an insane moment where you have to reawaken a phoenix, right? And at this point, a kraken appears like out of nowhere, and it's crazy because it's like that Deadly Premonition thing where you see interact with the phoenix in the background, like press circle button over it, but it's like I didn't know you just literally had to damage the Kraken, like attack its... I was like, I thought I was missing something. And you're pacing back and forth, and Kratos keeps saying, I grow tired of the lies of the gods. I'm like, what is going on? This part like really stopped me in my tracks.
Was this the part where you said it made you 200% mad, or was that a different section?
Later.
Oh, okay, sure.
Okay, so the main kind of antagonists are the Fates in this one.
And oh, yeah.
They are slightly more interesting than the Furies to me since they control time. But I don't feel that enough was done with the time mechanic.
Well, I also feel like
using the amulet to slow down time. Yeah,
that was kind of neat. Yeah. Thank you, Prince of Persia, Sands of Time. Yeah. So... time travel plots to me are always tricky because I feel like there's always problems with them. Well, I mean, if we were to get down to the story here, you essentially have to go back in time to before Zeus killed you.
Yes.
Right?
I think it's cool whenever you do this, especially at a fantasy setting, but I think you really gotta have kind of your rules clear, I guess. I think Zelda did it the best, like in both games. But it's very, very weird. I don't feel like it was integrated into the gameplay enough. The Loom of Fate thing at the end was kind of an interesting concept, but you know, when you're kind of pulling on the threads, and it's literally the end of this game is the end of Spy Who Shagged Me, the Austin Powers movie with the big like time portal. And it looks exactly like it. It's up there. And you got to go back to 1969 to stop Zeus from killing you. And go ahead.
What I don't understand about this plot is like, but if you can use what's it called? The Threads of Fate? What is it?
Loom of Fate?
The Loom of Fate. If you can just do it over and over again, wouldn't you just try something else?
Look, this is Kratos. He's not a very creative guy.
Well, you know what I mean?
All he knows is hit something with a rock until it dies.
I mean, I'm so curious what pissed you off, because there were a couple of moments that pissed me off, unless you have other stuff before that.
No, the thing that lowered this game's grade significantly for me was the 15-minute fight scene gauntlet.
Because that was not my rage moment.
Okay, that was it I was on normal mode.
Me too.
And it convinced me to go easy, just because of how annoying it was.
Yep. Yeah.
Maybe I was just trash at the game, but what was your moment?
The thing that's, oh my God, I don't know what happened here, but so when did this game come out? 07? Something like
that? Yes.
So we're in the massive QuickTime event era right now.
Yeah.
QuickTime events are hot. They're the thing. The end of the Zeus fight when you have to do like 8 of them in a row. Yeah. It took me like 30 tries.
Really?
Oh my God. I was losing my mind doing this.
I think it took me a couple, but not that many.
Oh, I was just like, man, I don't miss this era of games. Right. This is driving me crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, you fight Zeus at the end, and it is unresolved. It's like Vin Diesel and The Rock. You can't have anybody win.
Yep.
Because we got to have part 3. But yeah, there's a slapstick kind of a death for Athena here. She gets killed by accident, and the game ends on a literal cliffhanger because you're hanging onto the side of a cliff with the Titans.
What else is there to like say about the second game?
Nothing.
No, I just.
It's crazy because this is definitely like the fan favorite.
That's
crazy. I didn't get that.
I don't know. This game to me, what's tough about it is I don't have a lot of glaring critiques, but I also just felt like I was going through the motions the whole time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it's fine.
Yeah. What would you give this game?
Okay, this is tough because if I think of, I'm trying to compare God of War 2 to only the first one because that would be the time period.
Yep.
Here's what you get in God of War 2. It's not as quirky, and it's also balanced a little better. Like what I should have mentioned about the first game, there's a lot of puzzle solving, but some of them are so irritating and I feel like they weren't tested.
Unintuitive. Yeah.
Oh my God. Like I love puzzle solving, but in the first game it sometimes drove me nuts.
Sure.
But in the second game, it's very streamlined and the experience is smoother, but it's not as quirky and the bosses aren't as interesting.
No.
It's weird where I felt like I had a decent time playing it the entire time, but the first game I found more interesting.
Sure.
I don't even know what to give this game. It's like a C+.
Okay.
The second one, what do you think?
I'm going to give it a C.
C? Yeah, that's fair. I'll say C+.
My grade. So yeah, that's God of War 2. Sorry if you liked it, but I didn't really that much.
But I thought it was,
it's fine. It's fine. So let's get into God of War 3. So I wanted to mention very, very briefly, the kind of the authorial voice behind the following game, Corey Barlog. He briefly worked on this game, and departed early on. But his successor, described Corey's influence as significant on this game. So okay. he had a kind of a say on the direction it took. Vastly improved fidelity and much more fluid performance, 3 years after the second one. This was 2010. Used the original engine, but replaced certain systems for the updated PS3 hardware. A lot better graphics lead to even more visceral and borderline unpleasant kills, I would say.
There was something I really appreciated about God of War 3, and this is very, like, this is a very nitpicky thing that I like.
Yeah.
Were you surprised at how much continuity there was in the control scheme through all three games? The controls are almost identical in all of them.
Yeah.
So I felt it was kind of cool, like, because I played them back to back to back. It felt like I was playing one experience the whole time.
Right.
And I didn't have I didn't have to shake it off.
With
and
this
learn
one, it
new.
Got better.
Yes. You know, yeah.
More smooth. The quick time events are no longer as invasive on your screen, which I liked a lot.
Can I say one thing? I found they are easier and you're given like maybe a couple hundred milliseconds of more time.
Yeah.
So it's more fun. I did not like how they were on the sides of the screen.
Oh, okay.
I found myself like, I wish they were tighter to the center.
Sure, yeah.
Because sometimes enemies are obscuring it and I have no idea what's happening.
I mean, so I think in general, we need to get rid of quick time events, but
this was the era.
I appreciated that they weren't literally like in front of the action this time.
Yep, yep.
So that's one thing. One moment I thought was very, very imaginative, that made me wish that they had experimented with it a little more is when you gouge out Poseidon's eyes in the beginning.
Oh yeah.
I was like, cause it like, it makes you click in the thumbsticks. I'm like, but it was like, I mean, that was the most kind of, interesting quick time event I think they ever did.
Oh my God. But wasn't there a quick time event when you cut off Hermes' legs too? Don't you have to do it as a QTE?
Yeah, but it wasn't like it wasn't like picking up a hammer and breaking someone's legs.
That's true.
But I felt like in this one they finally were able to sort of capture a grand sense of scale. Kind of feels like what they were trying to accomplish the whole time. Originally, you had 15 enemies on screen. Now it's 50. And it feels like you maybe some Shadow of the Colossus influence.
Well,
on the Titans.
Something that I also really appreciated. I don't believe you've said this yet. The third game and the second game. The third game literally picks up right where the second one left off. Like you, on the second one, you're running up a mountain, and the third one, you're right at the same footprint.
Yeah,
it's interesting how they did this.
And it looks much better, obviously.
Yep, yep.
I thought that was great that it picked it up.
And right they do put a off. Lot of enemies on screen in this one.
And not in a way, I mean, you feel like pretty much well equipped to take them on. Your inherited gear remains the same, like the Icarus wings and the fleece, they come back, which I like that about it.
What I appreciated about God of War 3 is I was a little nervous they were going to do the, oh, you lose all your powers and gear again.
Right.
They kind of do, but you retain the platforming elements.
Yes.
So you can still parry and you can still fly.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool.
Yeah. You have one disappointing thing was that all the weapons you pick up feel kind of similar to the blades.
Yeah, where I feel like I just use the main weapon the whole time, but occasionally you bring out the fists because they have a purpose.
Well, yeah. In terms of like the blades of death or whatever,
I never use them. Essentially, you have the red blades, the purple ones, the blue ones,
right? And so, but they're I think they certain ones are more effective
against
different
certain
enemies,
yep,
right?
Yep.
I think a lot of the boss fights were very inventive, and the other gods yield kind of worthwhile game-changing tools. You want to mention something?
Yeah, yeah. So everyone in the audience knows I actually just finished this technically today.
Oh, okay.
So all of this is very fresh. I was saying to our friend Kyle, actually, in a chat, the first thing that jumped out to me about this game, I love how many Olympians and gods there are and how many you kill. And there's a lot of variation.
Yeah.
It's not just giant set piece, giant combat.
Yeah.
Some of them are ironic.
Yeah.
Where you hit a couple of quick time events and just fucking break someone's neck. It's
right.
Kind of funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I really appreciated the variation. In terms of you get the football tackle. I remember this. You get the Helios head, which is
the
lantern.
Yep.
And the Hermes boots. Run super fast. I wanted to mention, speaking of quite a huge cast here, some notable voice acting here. Clancy Brown plays Hades. He is Mr. Krabs.
That's
among,
amazing.
Among many other things. Malcolm McDowell, noted actor, was Daedalus. Kevin Sorbo reprises his role as Hercules.
Oh, no wonder he's an asshole.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But he came back after the 90s show. We gotta respect it. The late great Rip Torn is Hephaestus.
I'm gonna bring this up now. I don't know if you have an answer for this. Why is Elijah Wood thanked in the credits?
Why wouldn't you thank him?
I don't know.
That's
weird.
But I didn't see that.
It is. He is.
That's crazy. Yeah. So I want to just kind of right at the beginning address something. You get betrayed by the Titan at the beginning of this game, Gaia. She has no reason to betray you, but
no.
She just does so you can like fight more things. I didn't get it at
you
all.
You even help her too.
Right, so right.
That's like the one thing you choose to help and it still fucks you.
Yeah, it's just like a very myopic philosophy this series has. Mm-hmm. Something I thought I want to bring up that I thought was profoundly imaginative is that so basically this game is Kratos wiping out the last of the gods, right?
Right, and you really have one objective, get up the mountain and do the thing,
right?
Kill Zeus.
And I thought it was so imaginative that whenever you kill one of them, it negatively affects the world in different ways.
Yeah.
I thought that was awesome. So a couple examples, Poseidon, when you kill him, the world floods. When you kill Hades, the souls of the damned kind of roam free. Helios, the sun shuts off.
Yep.
I thought that was awesome. Hermes, plagues infest the world, and Hera, all the plant life dies. So you're basically making the world like a worse place.
Yeah, we're fucking trash in my homeland here.
Yes, yes, terrible stuff. But did you want to before we get to the end of the game? Did you want to bring up any particular highlights?
Sure. Can I bring up a low light?
Okay.
Is that okay? I want to say a positive first. The one we've been talking about it, but I said this to our friend Kyle as well. I thought the pacing in this game was awesome.
Yeah.
I love the moment to moment. It was wonderful.
Yep.
Here's my critique. So I don't know how to put this the right way, so I'm just going to try. I think games have come a long way since the fucking sex minigames in
yes.
this fucking franchise. What the fuck is that?
Well, okay. So correct me if I'm wrong, there's one on a boat in the first one. And then this one,
there's one in the second one too.
What's the second one?
There's a secret one.
Oh, really?
In the first hour of the game, there's this bathhouse you go in, and if you break this privacy wall, there's a sex minigame.
Oh, okay.
Fuck, goddamn.
Well, that's just for the pervs. But the one in this game I thought was the best one because it pays off when you talk to Hephaestus. I think Aphrodite is the sex scene, and you talk to Hephaestus, and he's like, "So, did you sleep with my wife?" And Kratos goes, "That is a question you should ask your wife." I was like, that made it worth it. Oh my god,
dude! Oh my,
terrific
god.
Stuff.
But I just before we move on from this,
yeah.
I just can't imagine something like that being in a 2022 game.
Absolutely not.
This is awful shit.
Not a AAA game.
Oh my god, this is like heinous, terrible shit.
Yeah, a lot of stuff that I consider myself not either a prude or afraid of seeing violence, but so certain things like. You physically rip off Helios's head. It was like, ugh, so disgusting.
Yes.
Cause you watch his skin tearing and shit and, breaking Hermes' legs. You mentioned that was very
gnarly.
You cut
him off.
Yes.
Jesus.
And, I guess that's what you're looking for in a game
a lot of
very gnarly stuff. I did the final battle with Zeus where, you're beating him until the screen is filled with blood.
And then you choose to stop
exactly.
on your own, right?
Yeah.
Very cool.
I thought that was awesome. I didn't even mention this, but, in my notes, but thought it was very undercooked. The Pandora, box character with the vault and I like the vault as a setting, but the whole thing was just undercooked.
I think it just came at you a little too fast. Not you personally, but I think it comes at the comes and goes too quickly.
Yes.
But you know what you kind of get here? They lay the groundwork a little bit for you being a father figure in the reboot.
Yes. Because
a little.
He lost his daughter and then it's kind of a
lost. He fucking killed her.
Right. but that's kind of what they're getting at here is the remorse and you know, just kind of a stand-in. So the ending where he forgives himself, I'm like, congrats, man. I'm glad you forgave yourself.
Great job.
Yeah.
What Kratos needed was hope. Okay.
What he needed was a good fucking kick in the ass.
That's what I was about. You took the words out of my mouth.
He needed someone to read him the riot act as far as I'm concerned.
Yep.
He betrays Athena's ghost and kills himself so that.
That was kind of surprising.
Power can return to mankind. I thought that was interesting.
I did not expect that.
One thing I wanted to mention before we wrap up the trilogy has kind of the makings of a classic tragedy with Kratos as the hubristic protagonist, but it really doesn't have that payoff where they kind of get what's coming to it's not like a Macbeth thing where he eventually kind of reaps what he sows. I don't know, it's just
kind of does.
It's at the very beginning. And then it's just kind of I don't know. It would have worked better if it was.
Well, I feel you get. I don't know if I agree with you 100%. I think you get a little bit. This is kind of morbid, but I think him understanding that he has to end himself to end this. I didn't really expect that to happen.
Yeah.
For him to plunge Zeus's blade into himself.
Yeah. I guess maybe just knowing. Because it does end with that little kind of stinger of maybe he's still alive.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of so he killed himself, but not really. You know what I mean?
Right.
It wasn't that much of a sacrifice. I was kind of surprised that I found out primarily this one was written by a woman.
Interesting.
So that was kind of interesting. Okay. So what would you give this one?
So... This is probably a B or a B plus, right?
I gave it a B. I think it was my favorite of the three. It was just really nice to see a lot of polish on the original formula. I thought the plot of killing the gods was very effective. Well done.
I think what happened with this game, I had a really fun time playing it throughout, but it's kind of a give and take, right?
Yep.
Where the first game is very quirky and the set pieces and platforming are almost aggravating as fuck, but it's very memorable.
Yeah.
The third game is very streamlined, but it's very fun, mm-hmm. and the pacing is very good.
Yeah, but you're not dicking around in the same place for too long.
You don't dick around at all, but nothing lasts very long. So you're really go.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it, I think, for what it is.
Kind of rewarding. I mean, like, it's not... It doesn't feel like too short each segment, but it's not too long either. It's not outstaying. It's welcome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd give this one a B.
And I would say, too, like, before we wrap, I actually really appreciated the some of the puzzle bosses where I think with Hera, you're trying to solve the mystery of the garden.
The maze.
Yeah, the maze. Yeah. That was cool. I think chasing Hermes around and then you have an ironic fight scene with him, I think, was also funny.
Yep. Yeah, taking Helios out of the air.
Yep.
His chariot, that was neat.
Oh, God, wait a minute. I actually have one rant.
Okay.
One. It's not a huge rant. I was not big on the Superman flying in this game, like those sequences.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of, like, I guess you would call it ludonarrative dissonance, where you can't fly up when you have the wings, but in the cinematics, you can fly up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, that was really, we need him to get from point A to point B
exactly,
in like a stupid fast way. But yeah, that's a little silly. I guess final thoughts here. What is your overall impression of the original trilogy?
Okay, so my original impression, I said it earlier. I liked this trilogy way more than I thought I would.
Yeah.
I was really dreading having to play this. We choose to make this show.
I did pick it.
Yeah. I was really dreading having to play this because I really don't want to play this manly man game, gore fest, sex fest. I don't really want to play that.
Right.
But what I really appreciated was, like I said, when we were discussing the first game, there's a little place in my heart for these mid-2000s adventure games, these action-y, riddly, puzzly sort of platformy games.
Yep.
Whether it's Prince of Persia or Beyond Good and Evil or this game, it hits a special niche for me that I tend to like.
Yep.
Another positive I'll bring up too, I thought the voiceover work for the most part was way better than I thought it would be.
Yeah. I don't think. I mean, game like this, the story is really kind of just a backdrop to the to the gameplay. But considered, it felt like everyone was taking it seriously.
Yeah, so of course,
that's a very big positive there. So, are you ready to get into the 2018 game?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So, brief point of note before we get into it. David Jaffe, I mentioned earlier, the creator of the originals, said that if he had done it, he would have incorporated three specific elements. Number one was different myths. Number two is a co-star. And number three, look to the Zelda structure as a jumping off point, which I think are pretty in line with what wound up happening.
Did he say if he made Ascension or if he made the reboot?
Well, if he had gotten the chance to work on another.
Oh, sure.
So he was kind of airing his grievance with Ascension or whatever.
Okay.
Right? Kind of a funny note here. He said, I like the idea of a cooperative mode, and I'd love to see player one be Kratos and player two be this stupid, annoying kid that for some to-be-determined story reason, Kratos is stuck with for the whole adventure. And in the end, once the main quest is over, Kratos snaps his neck.
Wait a minute, did he say that before the game came out?
Yes.
Wow.
So there's some ideas being batted around, right? This is an action-adventure game developed by Santa Monica Studios and published by Sony Interactive Entertainment in 2018. For a while after Ascension, Sony wanted the franchise to sleep and rest, their words, after the lackluster response of Ascension.
Wow, I really appreciate that when there are yearly franchises, right?
Yes, please God. Directed by Corey Barlog after David Jaffe was contacted but unavailable. most of the original team returned, which is surprising to me because it's so different.
It was made by mostly the team of the first game, right? I believe.
Yes. They described their influences as Dark Souls, Bloodborne, as well as Resident Evil 4 and 7. So
what?
I guess in terms of like...
I don't really get that in this at all.
The revamping, like the kind of reinvigorating combat, definitely more of the Souls kind of stuff. Inspired by Corey Barlog's wife has a Swedish ancestry, so he was kind of getting into that. And he as well became a father during this time period. So it's kind of Kratos is now a father, and you're getting into his transformation into that role again. commences several centuries after God of War 3, where Kratos has been hiding out somewhere in Scandinavia for a while with a wife and child. Following the death of his wife, Faye, Kratos and his son Atreus embark on a journey to deliver her ashes to the peak of a mountain and become ensnared in the machinations of the Norse gods this time, who have discovered their true nature as the Greek gods.
So they do the first quest in Death Stranding, but for 20 hours.
Yes, essentially, yes. So my first question to you here, Norse mythology has been portrayed a lot in pop culture recently. We have the Thor movies.
Oh, God.
We have Vikings, the TV show. We have Hellblade. We have Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
LOL.
We have American Gods. We have the Northmen. And we have Elden Ring. How does God of War's rendition stack up?
Until you listed all those, I didn't realize how inundated or how saturated this was.
It's a lot.
I think, I'm biased, but my favorites, it's got to be Hellblade in this, right?
Yep.
Well, what I think is maybe more interesting is the contrast of how they interpreted the different worlds and locations.
Yeah.
Because I remember, like...
I guess Skyrim, too, even.
Jesus, you're right. Where, when you think about, like, Helheim in, like, Hellblade versus, like, this,
yep.
Very different
yep.
kind of places.
Definitely.
How do I feel they did this? I'm partial to the medium, so I think this game and Hellblade did it as some of the best that I've seen.
Yeah. Yeah, I think definitely. And something funny on that point, a quote from Corey was, I was convinced the Hellblade people had our office bugged. I felt like by the time we released this game, all our ideas would have been done already, because they were showing like the trailers and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, oh, fuck. Notable switch up here. Christopher Judge is the actor replacing T.C. Carson.
Do we know why he didn't return?
I believe the reason given was he Christopher Judge has a much larger stature for the mocap, which they did. So this is all very and he had a good rapport with the Atreus actor. I don't really know how to pronounce it, but Sonny Suljic?
Yeah, something like that.
He plays Atreus. They had a good kind of chemistry, I guess, on screen together. So
it made sense.
Just pair them up, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of good banter in this game between the more stoic Kratos and the naive Atreus. Risks kind of being cliche at points, but succeeds thanks to the nuances of their performance, in my opinion. There is a over-the-shoulder or free camera angle. The whole game is one continuous shot, which I thought was interesting.
What do you mean?
Where like there's no breaks. Like it's just kind of like even when it goes into a cutscene, it just sort of pans out a little bit.
Oh, I didn't even realize that.
So you get kind of that
the one shot
journey.
You know what I mean?
Like from beginning to end. Atreus, I think, is in general a very useful companion, but there is a very funny kind of thing I noticed about him is when you're hanging out with him, when he's on the boat, he does this like weird stretch and it looks like he's bugging out. And I'm like, I couldn't tell if it was intentional or
not. I have
not.
No idea.
And he sometimes like teleports a little bit in a weird mm-hmm. way. And it's kind of derpy. I think the world is very beautiful, almost like post-apocalyptic in a way. Not many NPCs around. Kind of contrasts the anxious and busy world of 1-3.
Mm-hmm.
Notably, less graphically violent than the predecessors.
That's true.
Many of the enemies are comprised of like tree sap or some other magical substance.
How I described this to our friend Shannon was, I think they really tried to clean this one up.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. In terms of like the attacking and stuff, the strong axe attack is very satisfying, where you lift up the axe and chop into an enemy. But the game does recycle KO animations pretty frequently, which is disappointing. And I didn't feel there were as many unique boss battles or ways to dispatch them compared to previous titles.
No, it was a lot of trolls, right?
A lot of trolls, a lot of, just kind of
big thing
doing this similar things. So I want to ask you, how did the new voice acting, the tone and aesthetic of this game compare to the originals for you?
Sure. I think what jumped out to me right away, I just said it, they really tried to clean this up in all aspects. We're not doing this overt sexual manly man shit. We're not doing this anymore. This is some, I mean, it's pretty obvious that this is kind of God of War, but The Last of Us, right?
A little bit, yeah.
Well, tonally.
Sure.
That's definitely, I don't want to, you know, put words in anyone's mouth, but it's definitely purposeful. In terms of the voice acting, there's less yelling and stupid shit.
Yeah.
But I was more impressed by Atreus than maybe I thought I would be.
Yeah.
I was ready to just be irritated the whole time.
No, he was very, very, affable.
Yep.
Kratos was surprising to me as well with the kind of
a little bit rolled off.
Boy.
A little smooth,
boy. Yeah. Very,
smoothed off.
Yes. Kind of just growling a little bit,
yep.
You know, not shouting as much. Getting into, how it plays, very kind of Zelda or Souls-like lock-on system, always welcome to me. Does kind of feel unreliable or difficult to switch between enemies with it, though, which I would have liked to have seen better. His primary weapon is now, it's called the Leviathan Axe, which can be thrown and summoned back to you.
Yeah.
Which I would consider to be one of the last decade's like million-dollar ideas. It's like, it's so, I haven't seen that before.
No, where your main weapon, you throw it and it comes back to you.
And you have a button to come back like Thor's hammer.
Yeah, it's, oh yeah, you know, that's probably where they got it from. I mean, the first thing that only comes to mind is as if the Ocarina of Time boomerang was your main weapon and it always comes back.
Yep. Yeah, I thought it was an incredible idea. He can also use his fists and a parrying shield, as well as a hidden weapon that we'll talk about later, the second half of the story. And you have a kind of like rage mode like you did in the originals. This and all their weapons move sets can be upgraded via skill tree using earned XP. Did you like this compared to how you upgrade in the originals?
So it's interesting where I don't know if you, I don't think you've mentioned it yet. You also like have like gear that has stats.
Yeah.
Well, you have like armor that actually has statistics and math, which I didn't expect that at all.
The blacksmiths.
Yeah. I didn't expect that at all in this.
Yeah.
I think they're just different.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. I think this is just a modernization of that God of War formula.
Sure.
So I think it's just, it's probably a little bit more, I don't know what the right word is, welcoming or a little bit more, accessible for everyone. If you have your skill trees, you understand how it works.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I thought it was fine, is my opinion. I have no problem with it.
Okay. You can do like enchantments, the dwarf brothers, Brock and Sindri. There's currency in this game, which is interesting.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Atreus can provide support with spells and magic. I wound up putting more points into him than Kratos.
Really?
I was like very, because his bow attack, if you get it like really souped
I
up,
did this.
It's very useful for like stunning enemies.
Yep,
shit.
I did that all the time.
Great stuff. It makes him feel kind of like a more valuable character.
Yes.
And it, believe it or not, it was suggested early in development that Atreus be cut entirely due to the challenges presented. But the character is designed to be tangibly helpful and not burdensome. So this was kind of similar to, remember we were talking about Elizabeth from Bioshock Infinite?
Yep.
It's like this companion character, it's so hard to integrate, but it's like the key to the whole thing.
I think with God of War, it's inherently, I don't want to say it's easier because games are very hard to make,
yep,
but it's God of War, it's a combat focused game, let your partner do something.
Yeah.
Where in Bioshock Infinite, it was kind of like, I don't want to say, it was kind of a damsel in distress kind of game at times, where she only throws you items and
it's in a superfluous.
Yeah, it's a little bit superfluous. Where this game, no, the kid with you is gonna light it up.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, and he can also revive you if you have like a resurrection stone.
Yeah.
His little thing with his knife on your chest.
Yep.
I felt like also in this game, I do want to mention there were long stretches where the gear I was picking up were just not as good as what I already had.
Yes.
I don't like that in games where I want to keep finding like stuff that incentivizes me to play with what I have.
Our friend Will calls that the drip drip.
Okay.
Yep.
That's, I mean, drip drip can apply to a couple things, and that's one of them. You kind of get a little bit Metroidvania stuff too with the puzzle solving. using items you pick up over the course of the story with the arrows, you know, blowing up the red crystals with the shock arrows, lighting up the bridges with the magic arrows, etc. And the winds of hell, the thing you could throw and yep. Create a path with. Do you remember how specifically you built Kratos and Atreus? What kind of weapons did you use? What kind of moves?
Sure. Yeah. So I did put a bunch of points into Atreus so he could stun.
Yeah.
When it came to building Kratos, that's a good question. I don't quite remember how I built him.
I mainly worked with the axe. I thought the axe was just too fun.
Yeah,
the shield was obviously cool too, and the other stuff we'll get into later. But mainly, I thought the axe was. I felt like at times it felt like it could have been a little cleaner. Where you know, big strong guy with an axe, like just let me cut through, and it felt kind of like chunky. And it's I don't know. So that was a little disappointing. But other than that, I kind of stuck with the axe. There's some mods you can make to it, etc. There are some side quests in the overworld, including helping out the brothers. There's some ones that I didn't really get into, like the maze running in Niflheim.
I did most of that. Did I do the whole thing? I spent some time in there.
Oh, yeah. So that's kind of like a little bit of a Hades thing where it's like, you know, kind of making progress as you go to get pickups and stuff. I did a couple of the combat trials in the Muspelheim, the volcano place.
Yeah.
I thought maybe this could have been implemented a little bit better, the ghost NPCs, where it's just kind of like the same model.
Did you do all the Valkyrie fights too? All the optional ones? I did all of them except the last one.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not man enough for those. That was pretty tough. Did you feel like the optional content was worth it?
So yes, but I think they trended a little too far with the maze. It made it feel Kratos wouldn't do this.
Right.
Like you got shit to do. Why are we just like running this maze and getting then again, because the gear in the game is really for the player. It's not for him in the story.
Yes.
So it feels a little bit too much like RPG grinding for this kind of game.
And that's kind of something it carries over from the first one where I'm like, like the puzzle solving in the original, I'm like Kratos is like way too stupid for this. he's a blunt object. It kind of felt like in the Doom games whenever they had a puzzle. I'm like, this feels a little off message. I guess one last thing was the dragons. I thought it was really cool the first time I discovered one that was like chained up, but then when you finish it, it says dragons freed 1 out of 3, and I was like, I'm gonna blow my brains out.
Dude, it's a video game. Did you forget you were playing a video game? Let's remind you.
I hate that shit, man.
I hate that shit too.
Anyway, okay, so you ready to get in the story?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so this game was intended to make Kratos a more compelling three-dimensional character who learns from his son as much as he teaches him. One of the primary quotes informing the design was, how do you father someone if you've never been fathered yourself?
Ooh, okay.
And a little bit of that, for reasons I won't get into on the podcast, resonated with me. And I thought it kind of made me feel a connection to this guy who, like, I hated. Like, I could not relate to him at all in 1 through 3. And I'm so glad now that I played those beforehand because it gives you the contrast, you know? I wanted to bring up that this game has 9 main characters, very small cast, makes it feel very concise and focused. There is the very beginning of the game, I think a very intuitive moment where it starts out with his axe in the tree. And it prompts you to swing the axe and it teaches you what's the action button that way.
Yep.
And you cut down the tree that will form his wife's funeral pyre, and you realize it later kind of kicks off the entire story into motion. There's a kind of first boss battle here with the Stranger, which is a very interesting fight.
It's really
very,
strange.
Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
You very clearly early on that this guy is like, I don't know, he has some divine power. Voiced by Jeremy Davies, an actor from Saving Private Ryan and Lost.
Oh, wow.
Puts in he's kind of in a lot of odd roles, and this is one of them for sure. He has kind of tracked down Kratos and Atreus to their house. And it kind of It's almost like a mob movie. I realize this is kind of a mob series where, you know, like God of War 2, like they're going to whack him. He can't stay in line.
He's a misbehaving Olympian.
You got to get him out of here. And this one is kind of they drag me back in, you know, like one of the other families found me. Right. So this is one of the Norse gods you find out later. You introduce Atreus to hunting, which kind of leads to the Witch of the Woods character. As you shoot one of her deer and she gets really pissed off at you. And I thought it was really cool. She lives under that giant tortoise. That was a cool set piece. I want to briefly talk about this witch character. I think she seems like she knows what she's doing, but maybe like received poor direction because the performance to me felt a little clunky. Mm-hmm. It was very like not really knowing like the tone of what they were in. Whereas I feel like the other ones were just kind of like, I get it.
Did it feel too much like this is not an urban fantasy game, but perhaps the performance sounds like that? Sounds a little bit too much like Charmed rather than...
Perhaps. It was a little stilted. I don't know. It was sure. I'm sure she's fine in other stuff. You get the Dwarf Brothers very early on. So Brock is the first one. And I want to point out something really funny is that this guy's blue. And at first I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. Like he's a blue dwarf, whatever. But you find out later, you speak with his brother Sindri, who reminds me a lot of Jeff Goldblum. He's kind of that like fastidious, little persnickety guy. Very, very prudish, afraid of germs. And he says that basically, I've actually been reading about this recently. His brother Brock has a condition in real life. It's called argyria, where he's been working with specific materials like silver and stuff like that, and his skin turned blue. And this happens in real life because there's even a U.S. senator, I believe, who took a colloidal silver, like as they are suspicious of medicine, so they take it to like boost their immune system, and it literally turns your skin blue.
Wow!
So that's like the reason why this character is
so
blue.
It's in universe.
Yeah, I thought it was just they were just being silly. Like, okay, this guy's blue. So I thought that was very funny. So you get out to like kind of the main like Hyrule Field area, the Lake of Nine.
I didn't expect this either. I think this is probably one of the big gameplay surprises where I thought this would be a very linear action game, but then it opens up in this area.
Yeah, and not in a way that I found like overwhelming. I thought there was maybe some fat that could have been trimmed.
I think Hyrule Field's a good way to describe
it. It's kind of that main. There's a big temple in the middle that you find out more about over the course of the game. There's a really cool reveal here where the world serpent comes out of the water. This enormous kind of snake that you end up talking to. Tyr's temple is the one in the middle. It's cool that because Tyr is the Norse god of war. And you kind of have a little bit of contrast here where all the other characters refer to him as sort of this honorable character who tried to do what was right for people versus Kratos.
then you just feel like shit.
Yeah, it works perfectly.
Yeah, because the Greek god of war is an asshole.
Because Kratos is trying to set an example for Atreus, but has been a terrible person his whole life. And then you have this guy who is like obviously much better. There is a part where you have to pass through some dark mist, but you can't get through it without a specific item, so you wind up having to travel to one of the other realms. And this is kind of so you go to Alfheim for the first jump, and this is where the light elves are fighting the dark elves. And the dark elves look really cool, I think, because they're kind of like bug-like. They're like flying. I've never seen them portrayed like that way before. Wanted to ask you, how did you feel about the way this game handled the open world and warping to other realms?
So I had a little bit of confusion when I played this. I'm like, are these realms in the world that I'm in? Are we time traveling? Like, are these realms accessible, but I'm fast traveling?
I think the idea in Norse mythology is that all the realms are kind of in line with each other. They're just on different planes of reality. That's why the temple appears in all of them.
Sure. Okay.
That's my opinion. Something I want to bring up that this game reminded me of is like, I so miss this like kind of Crash Bandicoot thing where you, instead of having this enormous open world that takes forever to get through, where you have like a go to Lava World, go to Ice World.
It's not that different from Legend of Zelda 2, where you go to Zora Place, right. Go to Goron Place.
There's enough contrast where it's feels like I just feel like I'm saving time, or I'm, you know, I'm not getting an unnecessary amount of content.
The word I use is it's not open world, it's open area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's further, but we said Halo Infinite should have done this, where you have a couple small sandboxes.
I can't keep engaging you on this game. You got to let it go.
No.
Halo.
But I mean, like, our idea, I think, translates for other things where you have a couple small sandboxes instead of one big one.
Yeah, right? Of course.
So you get a dragon battle here, which is pretty cool. It leads you to Sindri, one of the dwarves I mentioned for the first time. And it's kind of a big moment for Kratos, because in the past, I was thinking, like, in the first three games, he probably just would have, like, let this guy die or killed him himself.
Yep.
And this is one of the first moments in the series where you actually have to help somebody, because Atreus is like, come on, we can't leave him to get killed.
Now that you have a son and your son tries to instill morality in you.
Yes. Yeah. I think he would have just, like, taken his shit in the originals. Very funny moment here where you reach the peak of the mountain, and it's you find out it's not the peak you've been looking for. It's a very, like, SpongeBob moment where you meet that character Mimir, who's, like, the tree guy.
Yeah.
And he kind of opens a portal. He says, the tallest peak in the realms is in Jotunheim. And that's where and then you can see Kratos' like exasperation.
You
like,
fucking kid.
Fuck me. You're like a third of the way through the game. And the Mimir, when you meet him, is being threatened by the stranger, who's revealed to be Baldur, and his nephews, Magni and Modi.
Yep.
And this is very funny, because I know those names as specifically as pieces of equipment from a audio manufacturer called Shit Hardware. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Interesting.
That's another Norse mythology. All their stuff is named after Norse gods, but that's how I knew them. I think you just kind of sneak around them. Mimir reveals that the mountain they seek is in Jotunheim, and encourages Kratos to behead him to free him from his torment. And I think this was like one of the more successful aspects of the game for me, because it's like, I haven't seen a severed head character in quite some time, and he's hangs on your belt the whole time.
It's really weird, right?
And he like talks to you, and he's kind of like your little comic relief guy. And it's fascinating. It's like, I don't know. It's very unique, I would say. Because he severs his head, the witch reanimates it. Both characters encourage Kratos to tell Atreus of their true nature as gods before it's too late, because Atreus doesn't know that they're divine. Something cool is that you have to get a chisel from the corpse of a giant in the north, the giant Thamyr, and they are ambushed by Baldur's nephews in a unique boss encounter where they use like the fog to disguise their advance.
Yep.
I thought this was pretty cool. I thought this was one of the few unique boss fights in this game.
You talking what are their names?
Magni and Modi.
Yeah.
The preamps. Boss. Yeah. No, I like this a lot. Magni gets axed in the face, and Modi comes back a little later when they're trying to break into Tyr's vault. They have to get an item out of there. Atreus winds up falling ill due to his inner conflict. And Kratos brings him back to the witch, who's revealed to be Freya, the goddess.
Did you understand why this was happening? Like, why did Atreus actually fall ill?
Well, it reminds me a lot of, I think it's a little contrived in Return of the King when Arwen is dying because of the ring, the power is growing. And it's like, it's one of those things. Like, so Atreus doesn't know essentially that he is a god, and he doesn't know what to do with all the power and emotion that's coming out of him, right? And so he kind of falls comatose there. And something a little tiny touch I wanted to bring up here is great, is that there's a really long elevator ride when you're going up to Freya, and Kratos paces back and forth. And it's just like, it's the tiniest, like he's antsy because the elevator is taking forever. Yeah. And it's just like a tiny thing about how like, you can't imagine that level of precision or, you know, kind of subtlety in the originals. So it's kind of interesting to see how games have how far they've come with motion capture and stuff like that. Kratos has to go to Helheim for the cure, but his axe won't work there. So he has to take a very pensive boat ride home. and to get some tools for the job, right?
Oh, yeah.
And something, another little motion capture thing I wanted to bring up here. On this boat ride, he starts hearing voices from the first game, and he also starts rubbing his forearms.
Oh, like from the Blades of Chaos.
Yes.
Yep. So very cool touch.
Wind up going home, and he fucking like the. I was like, this is a masterful reveal here, where you tear up the floorboards, and he's got them under there.
Because how do you get them off?
I didn't even. I mean, I'm assuming like if the power of the gods is dispelled or whatever.
Sure.
But I didn't even mention he doesn't have them on in the beginning of the game, and then you put them back on. And I want to ask you, so how did you feel that the blades translated to the new combat system here?
You know, some of our friends, they like the Chaos Blades more than the axe.
Right.
I stuck with mostly the axe because I just was just used to it.
Yeah.
I think it's fine. I think the reveal is cooler than, like, actually using them.
Yeah.
It's like you fucking shotgun under the floorboards here.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Well, the first time you use it, it is pretty, like, let's go.
Yeah.
But it does kind of feel the same to me with the axe, where I don't feel like I'm cutting through as easily as I should be. It doesn't feel as good as it should. I don't know. It's one like little tiny thing, but a very cool part. Quick trip to Helheim where he starts hearing Zeus's voice. I thought this was pretty cool because we didn't even mention in God of War 2, they reveal that he's Zeus's son, which is such an ass pull.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But like it backdoor works here because now he's examining his relationship with his own father. And how
so they laid just enough groundwork here.
it's one of those things where it's improved retroactively. Like it was a stupid idea to begin with, but it's okay now. Atreus is revived by Freya and begins acting arrogantly now that he realizes he's a god. He kills a weakened Modi despite Kratos's protests. This is kind of where the game gets into a dodgy territory for me structurally, where they get sent back to Helheim fighting Baldur, the stranger character. And, I think it's like, there really should have been that one hard hitting low point, that the pair need to rebound from. And whereas there's a couple like not
little ones.
Well, you know
I think
I mean?
They were trying to sell it with, Atreus, like kill almost like, what's the word for this? You see Atreus becoming Kratos by just killing somebody.
Yes.
And you know, Kratos doesn't want that to happen.
Right. Yeah. So you get a little bit, I mean, it's kind of self-fulfilling prophecy here a little bit where it's like, did you fuck up as a father, et cetera.
Yeah.
There's some fun kind of puzzle solving and trap avoidance in the Tyr's temple area. I thought that was pretty cool. And there are something I found very interesting is so you find like a pot from Greece with Kratos on it, and he like smashes it.
Yeah,
very funny because he's trying to hide evidence of
his past
to his son.
Yeah,
but you do see evidence of like the other pantheons. So that's my question: is like, are they because they show Aztec and Egyptian? I'm like, God help you if you do those because it's like I mean like it better be like 20 years from now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know, man. We can't just. I hate that Assassin's Creed kind of mentality.
I'm about to say it's a little Assassin's Creed magic treehouse shit.
Yeah, like let's keep it simple. I do like that. There's only going to be one more Norse one, apparently.
Sure, so
that's cool. Yeah, I like the part where you have to sail into the mouth of the world serpent.
Yep,
that's a cool part. It's kind of a truncated way of getting you back over to the dead giant with a for a final boss fight with Baldur because it spits you out over there, right? A very kind of yawn inducing moment for me when Freya like vows revenge because it's kind of I like this last boss battle a lot where Kratos and Atreus are kind of in sync.
Yeah,
where it's like he's like a very kind of derpy little boy in the beginning, and now they're doing like wombo combos. Like he's like shooting like Legolas like arrows at him and shit. And she's like pleading with you to stop fighting. She reanimates the dead giants. Very, very kind of classic God of War encounter.
Yeah.
She vows revenge because it was her son or whatever. And it's one of those things where I appreciated at least how like almost low stakes this was.
Yeah,
because it was like it wasn't like, you know, coming off of God of War 3 where you're killing everybody.
Right. I feel like, well, the other games you kind of have to take with a grain of salt that they're very silly.
Yes,
like you are like a god or a spawn of one and you're killing other gods of mythology. This is like what you call it, low stakes.
Yeah,
Yep.
Only one minor god.
I feel like what they're trying to do is, well, they're almost setting you up for the sequel by you're about to trigger an event, right?
Yes.
Essentially.
Yes, definitely. So you wind up going to Jotunheim, and I didn't tell you this, but you reenact the ending of Big Lebowski, where you toss the ashes over the mountain. He blows back at his face.
It's very funny.
I want to ask you how well this ending worked for you. It's kind of, you do feel, in my opinion, that they have grown as characters. They've taught each other a lot. Their bond is, because it kind of implies that Atreus was previously closer with his mother, Faye, who was revealed to be one of the gods originally. And Atreus is revealed to be Loki. How do you feel about this ending?
I mean, I'll make a joke first. Are you surprised that he got along with his mother better than Kratos? This fucking no, asshole.
Not at all. It's very much like sequel bait. So it's a lot of it's going to kind of depend on what part two does.
Exactly. Like, this is a very, I don't know what to call it, a sequel baity game.
It's like it's like the end of the first Dune movie. It's like, war is coming.
The whole game, I did not dislike the father-son relationship. I feel like it kind of treaded the line a little, where like Kratos is an asshole. I get what they're trying to do. I don't know. But I feel like when you get to the end of the game, you believe in them as a duo just enough where I'm willing to see what comes next.
Yes. I think it's you, because you kind of get that, like, it's like the winter is coming or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce it, the Fimbia Levator or something.
The grand winter.
The spell in Fire Emblem, that's good.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So you kind of get that seasonal change, like the end of Super Mario World where it turns to autumn.
Yes.
And it's kind of like implying he's going to have to square off with Thor next, right?
Oh, God.
So
Hemsworth, huh?
Chris Hemsworth.
He better do. He's not the VO, right?
I don't think so.
It's
It seems to be a different take. It's comes out in a couple days. I'm looking forward to it. I haven't watched like any footage at all.
No, I've watched nothing.
So it's Ragnarok. That's famously like the demise of all gods.
Yep.
They kind of imply a dark fate for Kratos in the ending of this game.
Well, I believe in one of the cinematics, Kratos sees like a wall painting of an older Atreus cradling Kratos as he's dying.
Right.
Right.
Yes. So, I mean, who knows? And they kind of, there's a lot of talk in this game. You find some tapestries about how this is part of Norse mythology, where time is circular.
Yes.
And where kind of events of the future influence the past and stuff. So who knows if that's actually what's going to happen. I feel like that's what they're baiting you.
Let's keep the time travel plot light, please.
No more God of War. No more Looms of Fate.
Please.
So this game, I am going to give a B+. How do you feel?
Well, I have to stay true to my word here. 4 years ago on a public forum, I gave it a B. So I have to say, true to my review.
You can change your opinions over time.
How I described this game a couple of years ago was, I like the game. It's hard to dislike, where sometimes I've thrown this word out here. I don't know if I've done it on the podcast yet. I've thrown this phrase out here where this game is a very good production.
Yeah.
Like, it plays really well. It sounds really good. It looks really good. It's really well optimized. I just don't have a lot of emotional investment in this game. So I can't tell you it's like an A and all, man. I was really, really like hoping for this father-son duo. It's fine.
Yeah.
The parent relationship is fine. You get just enough to have it go over the line, and the game plays really well. I am very happy they cleaned up the franchise, because it was kind of gross and stupid.
Well, you know what my other opinion about this game is, that I think it's a better legacy sequel than most series get.
I'm pointing at you in the studio space here, because that's a very good phrase for this. It is a better legacy sequel than, what do you say, than most series
get, and maybe even better than this one deserved, would you say?
Yes. Well, I mean, you're being funny, but like, I don't know if I'd quite say it that way. I would say I did not expect a hi-fi cleaned up, really good production from this.
Where the writing was the emphasis.
Yes. Like, and they actually did it.
And I have a trite little pithy quote here to wrap us up here. that this game found the humanity in the divine and the divine in humanity.
That's cool. And there you go.
And that's my button. I think it was a very good game. I put off playing it for a while just so I could catch up on the series. I am just excited as the rest of you to find out how they wrap up the story. And we will have, hopefully, an episode on that later this season.
Yeah, so is that it for you on
That's
God of War as a franchise? So, yeah.
Come a long way.
Yeah, it's come a long way. I will end it. I guess I'll have the last word here. I played this. I should have mentioned this. The first God of War I played was the reboot. I didn't play any of the original ones when they came out. That's probably very important to know. So I playing the original ones, I was very happy to see, to fill a hole in my gaming history.
Yeah.
I really like these platformy, puzzly action games of that era. I'm really happy that they cleaned up and got rid of all the over-sexualization dumb stuff.
Yeah.
And this reboot was very... it was a much better production than I thought we were going to get.
I think maybe even one other thing is that playing the originals and then this one, it's like for the first time, you know how like in maybe like MGS4, it's like Snake's like, I'm an old killer. It's like he was always kind of a good guy.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, Kratos was like such a shit that the redemption like feels like significant.
Yes.
It's like almost a different character.
Yeah, of course. It's
kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I would say you're correct. And I think this is going to do it for the God of War retrospective. And we are about to play Ragnarok and we will let you guys know what we think. So we'll catch you next time on Goddamn GameCube. Thanks.